One other sort of question that came up in here and that popped into my head, it's not in my bullet points, I wanted to ask you before I forgot, was what about reports from pilots? Do you get many reports from pilots? I know there's a lot of peer pressure on pilots not to report UFO sightings, but
Yeah.
I would presume that they probably get a lot of sightings. And
Oh, yes.
since you are the UFO reporting center, I hope that you get some good pilot reports, but you'd be able to tell me better than anybody.
Yeah, we do. We get a lot of pilot reports. Some come to mind immediately. Probably the first dramatic pilot report I received was on November 17th, 1995, Friday night, I believe it was. We got a call from Boston Center, FAA Air Route Traffic Control Center in Nashua, New Hampshire, apprising the National UFO Reporting Center that their center had received approximately three dozen reports from three dozen aircraft crews, commercial airliners, of an object that had streaked down the coast of Maine, across Massachusetts, across Connecticut, across Rhode Island, down across New Jersey, I happen to know, and it stopped outside an Air Force base in North Carolina. It was a dramatic night, and in fact, people can see and actually, well, I guess see the text of the official FAA recording, the voice recording, the radio communications between two of the airliners. I remember them. They were Speedbird 226 and Lufthansa 405 Heavy. They were talking to the FAA about what they thought had just gone by their aircraft, and you can hear the German pilot of the Lufthansa 747 say in the final analysis, "It looked like an UFO," he said. Well, we took many reports from New England that night and from the East Coast of the United States, and the first object that went down the coast, it was 22:20 hours, 10:20 p.m., when the first one streaked down the coast of New England. A similar-looking object followed it by about 20 minutes later, but the second one was at very low altitude. It was seen traveling just above the heights of the trees in at least near York, Maine. That's one place where it was seen. And the first object was seen to rendezvous with a group of objects that had been up over a mountaintop in Orange, Vermont. It was a very dramatic night. Another case comes to mind, I think it was September of 2000. Two airliners just north of Dallas-Fort Worth were at cruise altitude, both of them headed for the East Coast, one to Atlanta, one to Florida, Orlando, I think. And they had approached their aircraft three huge, intensely bright lights that executed about a 120-degree turn in under 5 seconds and streaked out ahead of their aircraft. That was a dramatic case. Another one comes to mind, June 22nd, year 2000. This was very close to you. It was down over Rhode Island, 12 nautical miles southwest of Providence, Rhode Island. A small single-engine turboprop aircraft with passengers flying from Nantucket up to Manchester, New Hampshire, had an object streak by it, pass within 50 feet of the starboard wing of that aircraft, and it was seen on radar. And you can hear in the audio between the pilot and the FAA the conversation about what the pilot had just seen. And the object executed in almost instantaneous turn and proceeded to track the airliner. It was a very exciting case.
It sounds like it. It sounds like it. Now, I know that there's a lot of fear, or at least, well, this sort of segues to the question, I guess. Well, back in the day, there was a lot of fear. There was a chill put over a lot of pilots as far as reporting UFO sightings, but it sounds like maybe that chill is starting to thaw a little bit, especially if you're getting a little bit of help from the FAA. So would that be your assessment that perhaps the chill that was put over many pilots as far as reporting UFO cases may be starting to thaw some?
That is my impression, but it's very difficult to know anything truly absolutely.
Yeah.
I think people are beginning to awaken as to what government can do when it is unfettered by citizen oversight.
Mm-hmm.
People are beginning to realize that there is merit to the UFO phenomenon and that the U.S. government has been lying to the American people and everybody else for approaching six decades. They must know the truth. After all, I've collected about 43,000 cases.
Wow.
With one telephone, one tape recorder, and one computer sitting on my desk. Can you imagine what the U.S. government must be collecting with all their intelligence agencies, with hundreds of billions, perhaps by now trillions of dollars worth of satellites orbiting overhead that can detect when somebody in Siberia strikes a kitchen match? Of course they're picking up these. To say nothing of what the distant early warning line or the BMUS line, ballistic missile early warning system line, is picking up, and the so-called fence across the southern tier of the United States must be picking up with its passive radar. Of course they're picking up these events. And what worries me even more than the UFO phenomenon, Tim,
mm-hmm.
is the U.S. government, which is lying to the American people about the UFO phenomenon.
Yeah.
The greatest question, my greatest fear, is the fact that somehow, some way, the UFO phenomenon has succeeded in influencing events on the planet Earth. How they might do that, I could only guess at. But I actually once met with people who occupied positions of considerable responsibility in the U.S. government, and they asked me, halfway through a four-hour meeting, they asked me whether I had ever run across information that would suggest to me or another reasonable person that there could be people in the U.S. government who were in the know with regard to the UFO phenomenon and who were acting in an extra-constitutional fashion, that is, illegally,
yeah.
with respect to the UFO phenomenon. That is the possibility that concerns me most of all.
To move on to a very key case that I've heard you speak about, we talked about it earlier when I talked to you before we set up the interview, and that's the Todd Sees case, August 4th, 2002.
Yes.
A UFO sighting, a man goes missing, a documented case of a death possibly due to a UFO sighting. Tell us what you know about this case, because it sounds fascinating.
Yes, it is. I was fascinated by it. And you are correct in saying possibly UFO-related. I will share with our listeners the chain of events that led me to my interest in that case. I received a case, apparently, I didn't really make mental note of it, I received a written report from an anonymous source that asserted that the source, the individual who submitted the case, together with three fishermen were floating down a river at the base of Mount Montour in Northumberland County, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And they asserted that they had been witness to a craft, disc-shaped apparently, hovering above Mount Montour. They also saw, allegedly, they saw a shaft or a beam of light that connected the top of the mountain to the craft. And they asserted that they saw a man's body being floated up the shaft of light into the craft. Okay?
Yeah.
Well, I believe I probably read that report and assumed it was a hoax. I assumed in error, it turns out, because several weeks after I posted that report, probably 2 or 3 weeks later, this would have made it maybe late August of 2002 or early September, just about 4 years ago.
Okay.
A query, an email from also an anonymous source, except for the email address, somebody wrote me and just excoriated me for not paying more attention to the Todd Sees case and asking why I had not. I quickly wrote back and said I hadn't paid any attention to it because I didn't know about it. And the party wrote back saying, oh, yes, you do. You posted a report about it. Well, I went back to the posted reports, and lo and behold, the writer was correct. I had posted that report, And I said, well, what does that report have to do with Mr. Todd Sees? And the party wrote back and said, you haven't heard that his mutilated body was found? And I said, no, I had not. And what had happened was that Sunday morning, August 4th, 2002, Mr. Sees had gone out of his home about 5 o'clock in the morning on an ATV to go up to his family property 4 or 5 miles distant on the side of Mount Montour to scout out populations of deer in preparation for the Pennsylvania deer season. Mm-hmm. Well, that is the last that anybody saw or heard Mr. Sees when he was still alive. By midday of that Sunday, his wife had reported that he had not returned home, and he was many hours late. So a manhunt was staged. Some 200 people participated in it, I seem to recall. They had helicopters, horses, dogs, and on foot. And they searched all Sunday. They couldn't find him, although they found his ATV up on his property, and his outer garments were neatly folded on the back of the ATV.
Huh.
They also found one of his boots approximately 60 feet in the air, tangled in the top of a pine tree, I believe it was.
Wow.
Well, they did not find him that Sunday, and even the bloodhounds, the tracking dogs, could not find a scent leading from his ATV. And the handlers, it was addressed in the newspaper articles, the handlers found that to be very strange because bloodhounds have very, very sensitive noses. They can pick up a scent that's almost unbelievably weak. Well, they stopped the search Sunday night. They resumed it Monday. The next day, Monday night, Mr. C's son, teenage son, was searching near their family home, and he found what he thought might be a human body. But he wasn't sure. The body was so mutilated that he certainly could not identify it as being the remains of his late father.
Mm-hmm.
But indeed it was. And the body was suspended above ground level in heavy underbrush, and there was a dead rattlesnake beneath the body on the ground. And some people assert that there was a very peculiar metal object, I believe, clamped to the upper arm of the remains. I talked to the medical examiner. He would give me no information, except to say that an autopsy had been performed. When I asked him if photographs of the remains had been taken, he said, yes, but you will never see them.
Huh.
The FBI was called into the case, I am led to believe. I can't confirm that because the FBI hasn't returned any of my phone calls. And when they were on site, I am told by a member of the search team,
mm-hmm.
within a very short period of time. I don't know how many minutes, but they seemed to get there very quickly. They confiscated the remains, and the remains were returned to the family in a sealed coffin. I am told by a member of the family that they were forbidden from opening the coffin, which was sealed anyway, so they couldn't have opened it, to the best of my knowledge.
Wow.
What happened to Mr. Sees, I do not know. Whether there's any alien participation in his tragic demise or not, I cannot certify. But I am told that every member of that search crew, that search party, was told that they would not talk about any element of this case. And I've made repeated efforts to get people to come forward, and they refuse to make any statement, and they refuse to make any appearance on a public radio program. People can see some of the reports on our website.
Wow, that's an amazing case.
I think. Yes, it is.
That'll be something that only gets bigger, I think, as time goes on.
I agree.
What happens with a lot of UFO cases.
Yes.
In the summer of 2005, at the MUFON symposium, you had a proposal for passive radar UFO detection.
Oh, yes. Actually, 2004, 2 years ago it was.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Have there been any advances in your proposal or updates on that since 2004?
Advances only in the sense that I've approached billionaires to inquire whether they would like to not just fund the project, but make their names available to make it possible for members of academia who traditionally shun anything that has to do with UFOs, make it possible for those members of academia to help me build the system.
Yeah.
And so far, nobody has offered even a scintilla of assistance, not a cent of financing. I am confused. What I have proposed, and you're correct, Tim, and I congratulate you for focusing on this, what I have proposed is a system using passive radar which will resolve the question of whether UFOs are real or not. And in fact, the day after the paper was published to the MUFON website, mm-hmm. I got a call from a senior member of the Central Intelligence Agency. He identified himself. Huh. He said that he had read the abstract of my paper, and he was calling to congratulate me on it and to say that if I were successful in building a passive radar system, I would succeed in resolving the question of whether UFOs are real or not.
Wow.
He did not say I would detect UFOs. He said I would be successful in resolving the question. So people can read my paper. It's posted prominently on the website at ufocenter.com and satisfy themselves as to whether my reasoning with regard to this type of passive radar system is correct or not.
And how extensive would that, something like that be? Would that be like a multi-million dollar operation to set up and run? It sounds pretty extensive.
A few tens of thousands of dollars.
Oh, that's it?
Very inexpensive. In fact, there are passive radar systems operating today, and they're built almost out of people's workbench drawers. They're so simple to build. Simply requires a very sensitive FM receiver. It requires a very relatively sophisticated computer that can crunch numbers very quickly, and those are getting cheaper and more available all the time, and the proper software. And you build two or three or ideally four such systems in a large area, and you coordinate the four receivers such that they all measure very precisely when they receive a signal that is being transmitted over the horizon, and the reflected signal from a target high in the atmosphere or out, even outside the atmosphere, and this information will allow us to detect and track and define UFOs, I hope, in the very near future.
I hope so, too. That sounds like a fantastic proposal.
Yes.
Hopefully it'll get off the ground.
Yeah, I hope so, too.
Now, you sort of alluded to a couple times here the government's role in the UFO phenomenon. Especially the potential for extra-constitutional type activities.
Yes.
What do you think the government's role is in regards to the UFO phenomenon?
Well, the U.S. government knows that UFOs are real. I'm certain of that. They must be interested in it. Obviously, you wouldn't want any other country getting access to that kind of technology because it would make your ICBMs and submarines obsolete overnight.
Yeah.
They couldn't afford to risk letting another country get that information and that technology. Their surveillance and reconnaissance systems must detect the presence of UFOs on the planet Earth all day long. That is my suspicion. But to get a definitive answer to your question, you would have to go to the government and pose your question to the government.
Yeah.
The problem is, one, you don't know to whom to pose the question.
Yeah.
Number two, they don't have to respond. The business of government is to lie to its people. And that's what the U.S. government is doing big time with regard to the UFO phenomenon, I believe. And I have the evidence that I think shows that very, very clearly.
And then another point that we were talking about discussing for the interview here was the lackluster coverage of the UFO phenomenon by the U.S. press.
Again, yeah, that's the biggest point of all. There are three questions that I find even more intriguing, more important for human beings than the question of whether UFOs are real. The first one is, why don't the UFOs show themselves clearly? The second question we've already dealt with, why doesn't the U.S. government square with the American people about the presence of UFOs in the near-Earth environment? We've dealt with that.
Mm-hmm.
The third question is, why is the American press not paying more attention to the UFO phenomenon? It is ultra bizarre.
Yeah.
People say, well, they're being leaned upon by the government. Well, I don't happen to believe that. There are a lot of members of the press. Many of them are fiercely independent-minded.
Yeah.
So they're not going to cooperate with the government. So I think we're dealing with a case of self-censorship.
Mm-hmm.
These people sincerely believe, or in fact, are not even aware that the UFO phenomenon is taking place. I think they're so busy sitting at their computer, in front of their computer monitors, waiting for some download from a wire service, that they've forgotten that a member of the press has to go out into the community to find out what's going on.
Yeah.
And very few members of the press are doing that. Again, that underscores the importance of a program like yours, Tim. And I do commend you again for your common sense and your realization that there's not only a story here, but a dramatic story to be covered, and an important one. So programs like this are very, very important, in my opinion.
Well, thank you. Now, what about the ABC UFO special? That was a pretty big deal last year, and I know that you were featured prominently on there. Now, I'm not sure if I've heard any interviews. I may have. I'm not sure now. It's been a while. If I've heard anything from you with regards to the show after it aired. I know that you were in good contact with the people who were making the show. So,
yes.
What did you think of the show and your portrayal on the show? Because you were featured pretty prominently.
Yes. I was featured prominently. I was terribly grateful for that. I worked with the ABC News team out of New York City fairly actively over the course of about 8 months or so. And so I was not surprised that they featured us. What I was surprised by was two things. Number one, they didn't even mention the biggest UFO organization in the country, maybe the world almost, save for China perhaps, and that is the Mutual UFO Network, which also provided ABC News with copious quantities of information. I talked to John Schuessler, who's the international director of MUFON out of the Denver area, shortly after the program, and I was shocked that the program had not even addressed that organization, and he was too. In fact, he was very miffed. They had sent thousands of pages of information at the request of ABC News to their offices in New York City, and not a peep, not the slightest allusion to the Mutual UFO Network, which I thought was particularly inappropriate.
Yeah.
Well, the other issue was what ABC chose to include in their program relative to what I know I gave them. I gave them the very best information I could possibly provide.
Yeah.
The best cases, the most well-documented cases, the most dramatic cases, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. And many of them weren't alluded to, weren't addressed in the least. I do not understand why. Instead, they talked about foolish sightings by astronomers who admitted with a giggle and a wink and a laugh that, after all, the object that they'd seen through the fog was the full moon or some nonsense like that. It just was totally inappropriate. And for the life of me, I do not understand why ABC did what they did. It is a total mystery to me. As big a mystery as the UFO phenomenon.
It seems like it followed the classic UFO special format, which is pro-UFO for the first half, anti-UFO for the second half.
Yeah.
And that seems to be pretty prevalent, especially with these new cable specials that are littering the airwaves as far as basic cable UFO specials go.
I agree.
One almost every night, practically. What do you think of that? That seems to be the only coverage that UFOs get is these cookie-cutter UFO specials that are on constantly that don't ever really go anywhere.
That's right. They advertise it. Daylight's out of them. Oh, we've got groundbreaking evidence, et cetera, et cetera. They must spend hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars advertising this upcoming earth-shaking program on UFOs. When it finally is aired, it's just totally vacuous, lackluster. And it doesn't really address the grist of the phenomenon. And I don't understand why they do that. It may be because they are media people. media people are different from you and me. They are, in fact, many of them are bizarre, in my opinion. They have not a scintilla of common sense, not a modicum of practicality to them.
Yeah.
And what they should do, if they really want to do a program about UFOs, is hire an expert from the field to serve as counsel and guidance to them, leading them to the very best cases. For me, the best cases are those in which many, many people see and report the same thing over a large area, geographical area, at about the same time of day or night. What that provides you is with many, many independent witnesses to the same event.
Yeah.
And in cases like that, it's not as though people are seeing a little swamp gas or a crash dummy or any of the nonsense that is traditionally promulgated by skeptobunkers. So I don't know why the press has been so lackluster in covering the phenomenon. For example, look at the crop formations in England and perhaps 100 other countries around the world. They cover these ghastly crimes and trials endlessly. Every night there's a new episode, like a soap opera.
Yeah.
On these ghastly crimes, but they're relatively minor incidents.
Mm-hmm.
And yet not a peep, not even a bat of an eye towards the crop formations or animal mutilations or human abductions. What is wrong with these people, I ask rhetorically, and maybe not just rhetorically. It is bizarre what the American press is not doing with respect to the UFO phenomenon. It is, in fact, some might even say it's criminal.
Yeah.
Given the special dispensation we extend to the press under the First Amendment to the Constitution.
Yeah, it is very disappointing, and I know exactly what you mean in the sense that some that are a run-of-the-mill sort of crime can receive hours and hours and hours of cable news coverage.
Yes.
When really it's just one of countless crimes that seem to happen all the time, and
yes,
not really necessary for that kind of coverage. Like we were saying, you've been in the UFO field for 40 plus years.
Yes.
As you've gone through the field and everything, what direction do you think ufology as a science needs to go from here?
Well, we have to do several things. First of all, we've got to get more reports. My estimate, Tim, is that out of 1,000 Americans who have been witness to genuine, bona fide UFOs or had UFO sightings, out of 1,000 such sightings, all ufologists have succeeded in capturing only one report out of that 1,000. So the real mission is to increase the body of evidence we have by 500 or 1,000 fold.
Wow.
In order to capture as much of that information as we can. The other thing is we've got to interest academia.
Mm-hmm.
These are the people who have access to the technology and the techniques and the manpower and the budgets for investigating the UFO phenomenon aggressively. We have to do that. Right now, if a person in academia even reads a sentence that has three letters, UFO, in that sentence, he or she might risk not getting tenure or not getting a promotion to adjunct professor or you.
Yeah.
God only knows what could happen to them. This happened to Dr. David Jacobs at Temple University in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
He is being penalized for his excellent work, his excellent investigation into the human abduction phenomenon. He has not been credited with all the books he's written on the subject because the university has taken the position that it doesn't apply to his field of history, even though he did the first dissertation on the subject of ufology of anyone in this country. So we have to interest the members of academia. Also, we've got to get people in government who are interested in this field, who will tell the American people the truth about it. as opposed to the litany, the steady diet of lies that we're getting from these people. We have stories about reports that are submitted to senators, members of the congressional delegations from all the states. They read these things, and they say nothing about them. This is wrong. Those people have a responsibility to tell the American people the truth about this phenomenon. And finally, I think it will be very important to build a passive radar system to start detecting UFOs without government serving as intervention in the data. Right now, most radars, not all, but most radars in this country are run by the government. So the government controls the data. This is wrong. We've got to get some individuals, private individuals, running their own systems and reporting to the American people the way the National UFO Reporting Center does.
Yeah. What do you say to the folks in the field who have sort of the perspective that they're like, we have to move on from lights in the sky, that sort of attitude, where that ufology should be doing something different? I'm not even sure what exactly, but
correct. We have to. Lights in the night sky are impossible to identify, and they're a waste of a ufologist's time. What we need is reports of more dramatic sightings, in which cases people see craft, as they did in the case of the Phoenix Lights in March of 1997, as they saw in St. Clair County, Illinois, January 5th, 2000, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. Those are the reports we need, but what we need is for the American people to get up off their backsides and write down their reports, not call, not think about, not talk about at cocktail parties or in bars about their sightings, but write down their sightings and report them to the National UFO Reporting Center. That's what we need. And until that is done, we have a lot of work that stands before us.
And what do you think about this new movement that sort of developed in ufology that's geared toward exopolitics and disclosure? Not so much what you think, if it'll happen or not, but what do you think of, do you think that's a natural evolution of ufology? It sounds like some people are getting off their proverbial dust to sort of become more proactive and activist-oriented as far as ufology goes. Do you think that's necessary?
Well, it's a great idea if it works. We don't know whether it's going to work. I take the position that the senators and congressmen in Washington, D.C. have a responsibility to their constituents to tell them the truth. Clearly, this country has gotten a far distance from that principle, and I think what the American people are going to have to do is put people into office who therefore have the power to delve into these questions. That's what we need. And we've got to educate members of congressional delegations in order that they are coming to ufologists, as once happened to me, coming to ufologists for answers to their questions. That's what I would like to see.
Yeah. Okay, and then just sort of like the little final question here. Last I heard, you were moving to an old missile silo. You want to tell us a little bit about the big move and how that went, and hopefully you're all settled in there now.
You're correct. Not a silo. It is a missile site.
Okay.
In March of this year, I, after a three-year pursuit of owning one of these sites, succeeded in purchasing what turns out to be the first underground ICBM missile site that the United States government ever owned or commissioned. It's ironically located in Davenport, Washington. That's where it is located, and I moved just a month ago to eastern Washington from Seattle, and for the next several months, more like next several years or decades, we'll be working on this site to turn it into my home, and not only my home, but the home base for the National UFO Reporting Center. So our listeners can rest assured and be relieved that all of the UFO data that I've collected will be carefully and safely ensconced in a very secure facility. I speak facetiously, of course. I'm sure they're not in the least considered or not the least concerned about the safety of this information. But it is important information, and that's where in the near future it is going to be occupied.
Yeah, well, I'm sure.
Situated.
Some of us are concerned. I mean, come on. I mean, anyone who's familiar with what I like to talk about a lot on the show, the APRO, the missing APRO documents, we don't want something like that to happen to your stuff.
Yeah.
And how can people help out the National UFO Reporting Center? I know you take donations. How can they go about helping out?
Well, thanks for asking that question. There are a couple things they can do. One is just pay attention to programs like this and compliment their hosts for having done a program on the subject of ufology. The other thing they can do, and this is most important as well, is if they've had a UFO sighting, don't just think about it all your lives. I've had people call me who saw UFOs in the 1930s, and they waited, 60, 70 years to tell their stories.
Wow.
Write down the information surrounding your sighting. Do not leave this planet, as we all do, ultimately, without having written down your sighting, written black ink on white paper, and preferably, hopefully, they will submit that well-composed statement as to what they saw to the National UFO Reporting Center, and we will post that information. It will be anonymous, of course, as you pointed out at the beginning of this program, and let the world know about their sighting. So that's what I would like them to do. And if they would like to send us a small donation in the range of $5 to $25, they can send it to the National UFO Reporting Center, P.O. Box 700, Davenport, Washington, and the zip code is 99122. Again, that address, National UFO Reporting Center, P.O. Box 700, Davenport, Washington, and the zip code is 99122. And they can also, if they encounter other people who've had UFO sightings, encourage them to write it down and submit it. Capture the data.
Exactly.
Sit here watching these reports not get reported or these sightings not get reported. It's like being a gold miner watching 2-ounce nuggets go out the end of the sluice box.
Yeah.
It is very frustrating.
Peter Davenport, thank you very much for appearing on the show. It was a real pleasure to talk to you. You're just a wealth of information. I get the feeling we could talk for hours if we both had the time. So it was really great speaking to you. The websites for the National UFO Reporting Center are www.nuforc.org or ufocenter.com. You can find out more information about all the cases we discussed there. You can file your UFO reports there. If you've had a UFO sighting, as Peter said, you've got to put it down. You've got to send it in. It'll only help us more. So, NUFORC.org or UFOCenter.com, those are the websites. Should we give all the number, too?
Yes, indeed, if you could, please, Tim. Area code 206-722-3000. 206-722-3000. That's our hotline for recent sightings only within the last several days or so. And we always ask people to follow up their telephone calls with a written report.
Excellent, excellent. And they should carry that number around with them in their wallet or in their car or something in case they see a UFO, right?
Yes, indeed.
All right. Well, Peter, thank you very much for appearing on the show. I really had a great time talking to you.
Well, it's been a wonderful hour together with you, Tim. And again, I compliment you for your interest in this fascinating subject and for your having brought it to so many listeners to let them know about the subject as well.
That does it for the interview portion of Been All of America Audio for this week. Big, big thanks to Peter Davenport for coming on the show. I've been listening to Peter Davenport on the radio for a long, long time, so to have the opportunity to pick his brain about the UFO phenomenon and learn more about the National UFO Reporting Center was just a great opportunity for me and an educational one at that. You can find out more information on Peter Davenport and the National UFO Reporting Center at www.ufocenter.com. There you can look through the amazing number of UFO sightings they have on file, or file your own UFO report if you've seen one and you want to get it down on paper, or just explore and check out some of the amazing stuff they have there. Definitely check it out, www.ufocenter.com. And now we continue onward with the new tradition we started last week on Banal of America Audio, and that is Banal of America Audio listener feedback. And this week's letter comes from Jeff, no hometown listed, so we'll just call him Jeff from Parts Unknown. And Jeff writes, "Hello, Mr. Banal. I really enjoyed the Paul Kimball interview you did. I have only recently discovered Mr. Kimball. I found myself being in the camp that enjoys him. He may be a bit harsh when I don't think he needs to be, but we could use more like him. Signed, Jeff." Well, thank you for writing in, Jeff. I appreciate the feedback. And your letter is really indicative of a lot of the feedback we got on the Paul Kimball interview. I'm not sure if that's a testament to the Banal of America Audio audience and our style of show, or if it's just that the Kimball haters didn't even bother to listen. But overwhelmingly, the feedback was positive for the Paul Kimball interview, so I was kind of surprised by that. I expected some hate mail regarding some of the stuff Paul said. Maybe they just didn't hear it. I don't know. So kudos to Paul Kimball, and kudos to you, Jeff, for writing in and being featured here on Banal of America Audio listener feedback. If you would like your email read on Banal of America Audio, you have a comment, a question, a guest suggestion, any of the above or more, you can simply write into boaaudio@hotmail.com, boaaudio@hotmail.com, or just go to banalofamerica.com and click the contact button in the top right-hand corner on the menu, and you will be well on your way to having your email read on Banal of America Audio listener feedback. Moving right along, let's talk a little bit about the UFO Crash Retrieval Conference 4. It was just an incredible time out there in Las Vegas. We have posted an in-depth recap of the speakers, what they were talking about, and that kind of thing at banalofamerica.com. Definitely check that out. We have a ton of great pictures, courtesy of Banal of America friend Ralph Molesworth, who was there on the scene with us. He documented it in photographs in an amazing way. You got to check those out. As luck would have it, I recorded 5 interviews on location in Vegas with some of the speakers: Richard Dolan, Nick Redfern, Paul Shatskin, Matthew Toomey, and Dr. Michael Sala. Those are the 5 people I had a chance to talk to, and we will be compiling those interviews together soon into a one-off edition of Banal of America Audio that we're calling the UFO Crash Retrieval Conference Special. Just a tip of the iceberg here. Richard Dolan talks about his upcoming book and his sci-fi series. Nick Redfern talks about alien viruses and the Berwyn Mountain incident. Paul Shatskin talks about T. Townsend Brown and Philo Farnsworth, early 20th century inventors. Dr. Michael Sala talks about military whistleblowers. And Matthew Toomey talks about the Lummi Island incident off the state of Washington, which may just have been a UFO crash. So we talked to those 5 folks at the UFO Crash Retrieval Conference in Vegas on the ground reporting, and we're going to have that for you, I'd say, within the next couple weeks. I need to iron out some bells and whistles. I want to see what else I can throw together here for this special, but it's going to be quite a festivus, and you will be well informed ahead of time when it happens. Throwing out the big thanks, of course, to Leslie, Chiron, R. Lee, Joe V., and Ralph Molesworth of banalofamerica.com for your help and support with the audio series and the website. Notably this week, I want to give a super shout-out to Leslie and Chiron. When I returned from Vegas, I was a little out of sorts, and they just had material ready to roll out for us and to keep banalofamerica.com up and running while I was trying to figure out what time zone I was in. These 2 folks are amazing, and I really appreciate it. So hats off to Leslie and Chiron this week. Also, additional hats off to Ralph Molesworth, who served as my wingman in Vegas. Although he doesn't like being called the wingman, he was the perfect wingman in Vegas. Check out banalofamerica.com. I can't plug it too much, I guess. Ton of material up there. In-depth recap of the UFO CRC-4 from Vegas. And, of course, the weekly columns, Leslie, Chiron, R. Lee, Joe V. Summer Special Series. I'm hearing rumors that it may be kicking up again for the winter session. And, of course, Ralph Molesworth's awesome pictures from the UFO Crash Retrieval Conference. BanalofAmerica.com. Make it a part of your everyday search for esoteric news and opinion. If you are a longtime Banal of America audio listener or an appreciative newcomer, and you want to help support the audio series and the website, click the PayPal button at BanalofAmerica.com. Make a donation. No donation is too small. Every little bit helps. We just recently had quite a wave of donations, and I really want to thank those people who have donated from the bottom of my heart. your money will be going to good causes like paying for this show, paying for the phone calls, paying for the bandwidth, and pretty much making sure that Ben All of America Audio remains free for our ever-growing listenership. If you want to be a part of those folks who are helping to keep the show up and running, click the PayPal button at benalofamerica.com. The expenses for this show come out of my pocket and from donations from listeners like you. So if you can help out, it would be hugely appreciated. Next week on Ben All of America Audio, it is going to be a wild one. I've wanted to do a Moon Hoax episode for quite some time, and finally I decided when we started putting together Ben All of America Audio Season 2, I was like, let's do that Moon Hoax episode I've been thinking about. And I wanted the best of the Moon Hoax folks, so we went out and got Bart Sabrell. He's the creator of the film A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Moon. He is sure there was a moon hoax, and he's going to tell us why next week on Ben All of America Audio. Plus, he'll go in-depth on the infamous Buzz Aldrin incident when he got punched in the face by Buzz Aldrin. It's quite an interesting story. We delve into the Buzz Aldrin punch and all kinds of moon hoax stuff and moon rumors that sort of are tangential to the moon hoax. We're going to cover all that with Bart Sabrell next week. Stick around for an audio preview of that. And on that note, there's not much left to say, folks. If you're an American, I hope you have a fantastic Thanksgiving holiday. If you're not an American, I hope your Thursday's cool anyway. You'll be hearing from me next week, November 25th, 2006, with Bart Sabrell talking about the moon hoax. Until then, this is Tim Benall, signing off.